Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Rosemary Klein, the director of the Hampton Theater Company, which is in its 43rd year, as I understand it. You have an upcoming schedule. We wanted to talk about that. Maybe start. What's coming up in the next couple of weeks here?
We do. And the name of it is I Do. It's a musical, and it opens on March 12th and runs through to March 29th. And it's Thursdays through Sundays. And at hamptontheater.org, you can get tickets, or you can call 631-653-8955. I think that's right.
What theater is it?
It's the Hampton Theater Company, and we're doing the musical I Do. I am the director of that, and I'll just make a slight correction. We are in our 41st year, but, fingers crossed, we're going to make it to 43.
Well, they were probably thinking about it for 2 years.
Oh, but there was some thinking going on around the kitchen table when we first started. That's true. It took some time.
Is this in the Quag Theater?
Yeah, it is.
Has it always been there and it's ever been somewhere else?
It has been a couple of different places. We started in one of the West Hampton Beach schools where we did our first show, Anne Frank. And then we stayed in the school for a couple of seasons. And then we were in a tent outside the Jehovah Witness building doing a show in August 1 year in the beginning, Hoddle, Baltimore. And there was a hurricane. And we did the show, and the tent was going, and people came. It was crazy. It must not have been a really, really bad hurricane. But we were all there, and it was really fun. And one of the actresses lost her voice. So I'm like, oh, my God, what else could go wrong here? But it all worked out.
Where is the Jehovah's Witness building? I never heard of that.
It's north, on your way to Spionk, if I remember properly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, that takes care of that.
Now you know. That useful bit of information.
It's about your current project and a little bit about it and how you chose it.
Sure, you bet. I Do was produced on Broadway in 1966 with Robert Preston and Mary Martin, who a lot of people saw that and fell in love with those two. And then it ran over 560 performances, I think. I came upon it by accident because our music director, the venerable D. LaVeglia from the North Fork, he worked with us in Forum, and we wanted to work together again. And so we looked for a musical that was small to fit the time slot, to fit the budget slot, et cetera, et cetera. And he brought this along. We must have looked at 40 musicals to do. And he brought this, I Do, a two-person musical, which I'd never heard of and didn't know there were two-person musicals. But after a while, he played me the music. He showed me a production that I liked very much. And then we decided to do it. And I think the real challenge for us came trying to decide. The casting was really difficult because normally when a company does this, they are using actors in their 30s and 40s because the age range is from the character's 20th year to their 70th year. It's through 50 years of marriage, 1898 to 1948. But I really wanted to use young actors. So we did, and we had a shoe-in for Michael Nicoletti, who was Pseudolus in Forum and was actually a former student of mine at West Hampton Beach High School when I was directing the plays and musicals there. And also, he's the newest member of our board of directors. And I thought, oh man, I think Nicky would be great in this role, be great for him to grow and stretch, and he would do a beautiful job. Then we had to come up with the right female to match him. And I think we saw, if I remember properly, over 40 young women. And the Savannah Jean Moore, who we have, she really, really stood out. And for a very specific reason, all of the young women had gorgeous voices. There are a lot of very beautiful singers coming out and well-trained and able to do all kinds of great stuff. But really not easy for a 20-something to make the difference, the stretch between 20 and 70 years old. And in the auditions, that was necessary. I gave an early scene, a middle scene, and an end scene. And also another thing that's really difficult for the contemporary actor these days is to understand that the mannerisms and the style of person in 1898 and into the turn of the century, it's totally alien to them. But Savannah did something that was what made me say, yes, she's the right one, besides her beautiful voice. She was at the audition, which she had to drive through a snowstorm to get to us, and she's from the city. And she told me the other night, so I was driving her home, she said that if she hadn't rented the car the day before the snowstorm and had already paid for it and couldn't get her money back, she probably would have stayed at home. But because of that, she came out, and that's that story. But here's what she did that was kind of remarkable. She was doing her audition. She was a little tiny bit late. So of course the adrenaline was pumping and she was nervous and she doesn't know us. She had a certain amount of poise, which was wonderful. But in the text audition, after she had done one of the scenes once, I said, so I'd love to see you try. And I gave her like 6 or 7 different points to adjust. And she did them all. Right there, just like that, which is not easy. So I understood that not only was she well-trained, but she had really good instincts. So that's our cast.
Tell me a little more about that specifically.
Her ability to do that?
Not the ability, but what it was like. What did you give her to do and how?
Generally, what they were physical, vocal, and attitudinal things that showed me she understood that it wasn't a contemporary role, that there was a specific physical mannerism to be, there was a stylized way of being physically, but also in relating. Like, it's not casual, it's not sloppy in any way. These people were not like that. They were in this upper middle class at that time, people were more Victorian. So that's a real stretch for a young person, especially if they haven't seen movies or done something like that before. So I thought that was impressive.
What's her resume? What has she done before?
Well, I can send it to you for sure, but I can't reel it off for you. But she has done a wonderful training. She has a great story. She came from Alaska. I don't know if you have time for a little bit of her story.
Yeah.
She came to the lower 48, as she told me, in 2019 to go to school for linguistics and something else lovely. And COVID hit. She had her own COVID moment. And during that time, she actually realized that although she loved theater and was using it as a club situation or a side situation in her first university, she actually realized that COVID made her think, no, you know, I really want to do what I want to do. So she had a professor who told her about a wonderful, rigorous program at LIU Post. She transferred and went through that program and said she has never thought about it again. She's never looked back. And the rest of her resume, I really would have to send to you, but she's not very far into her career, but it looks like she's done some meaningful work and it's really worked for her.
Where did you hold the audition?
We hold them at the theater.
Tell me about the Quag Theater. You probably know it has a low profile.
I know. And maybe you can help me understand. As the new president of the company, one of my missions is that we have such a strong foundation. We've had so many wonderful people build it. And I've been there since the roundtable 41 or 2 years ago when it was created. But what we don't have a really good handle on is how to promote ourselves to a wider audience. So that's one of my missions in my tenure. But you're right, it doesn't. In fact, it's sad to say, but we have discovered that in Quag, people have lived there for 40 years and don't know we exist. So that's really an eye-opener. And we are tackling that. We're trying to figure out. We have a couple of things in mind we're trying this season, and we'll see how they work. But we are in a push to raise our profile.
Do you have a large poster that shows the shows that are going to be placed?
What I have is a postcard that has the season on it, and then each show gets its own poster.
Do you put one up in the post office in Quag?
Yeah.
You do, all right. That.
And their outside thing where everything, you know, gets posted.
Yeah.
That sort of billboard that has 2 sides, yeah.
I've been to a couple of shows there, and I could be wrong, but my recollection was there was not much in the way of signage out front to tell you it was the theater.
Well, you're right. And the reason for that is that it is a public building, actually. It's the Quag Community Hall that's connected to the village office. So It's very tastefully done. What you have is a little glass little house, I'd call it, and it's like a big birdhouse, but it has glass in the front, and your poster goes there. And then over the top of the lintel, there's two posters. One is the Hampton Theatre Company when we're in residence, which is September through June, and then under that is the big banner that's for the individual show. But that's it.
You got to get into the internet and
And
send press releases to newspapers and websites and stuff like that. How many shows are going to be played there?
we do three shows a year, and we do a Christmas reading. We've been doing the Christmas Carol for a couple of years, and a whole bunch of fun people love that. We have a fantastic general manager, Terry Brennan, and we've just started a whole bunch of Facebook ads, which we hadn't done before. But our releases go out to all the papers and the radio stations, and we get some coverage from articles, but not like we used to. I don't know if theater was more important before or when Lee Davis was around. We used to get so much coverage. But I'm happy to hear any ideas to raise our profile. So,
I will call you and make some suggestions, but this is probably not the right venue for that. You were there at the founding of it.
yes.
What caused that? I mean, West Hampton Beach had its movie theater.
That's a
We
good
had
question. Yeah. Here's what caused it. It's actually, I was thinking about it the other day. Why did June Ewing, the godmother of our company and my former late mother-in-law, want to do it? And I thought back and I'm like, oh yeah, her son Jimmy Ewing, she has two sons, Johnny and Jimmy, and she has a daughter named Holly. Her son Jimmy was spending the summer, I think, or maybe a year in between different projects with her at her house in Quahog. And he had a friend come with him. His name was Jim Irving. And they were a little bit at loose ends, but Jimmy knew that he liked theater. It was really kind of a will-o'-the-wisp kind of thing. But his mom seized on it and she said, well, let's make a theater company. And none of us knew what that meant. It all started around the big kitchen table, and we got lots of local people involved who are no longer with us, and some because they are no longer with us, and others because they moved on to other things. But that was the whole impetus for Anne Frank. And once Anne Frank happened, we all realized that we were super jazzed and
Yeah.
we didn't know what it was we were trying to do, but then we suddenly felt the value and the joy, and it just really fast got in motion. At one point, we were doing five shows a year, and there was a company of us, Andrew Botsford, and a bunch of us who did all the shows. We had a director come out from New York City. Her name was Jane Stanton. Jane was an old battle axe of a director. She took a bunch of us up to her summer stock in Essex, Connecticut, but she put us on the map. She made us a professional company where we paid everyone because she worked and I think ran the old Vic. She had other theater companies in the tri-state area. She had been in theater forever. And she'd say, Rosemary, whatever you're doing up there, that's awful. Don't do it again. She was really great. And we adored that woman. And we worked with her. I think I did 25 shows with her there and probably nine at the Summer Stock Company. Wonderful, wonderful woman. In fact, she's the person who we got a grant for that lasts 3 years, three productions, and it's called the Jane Stanton Women in Theater Grant. And we just did our first show in September, and we have two more to go.
What was the most controversial of the shows that you've done over the years?
Ooh, good question. Most controversial. It might be the most recent one we did back in October, September, October, which was the first in the Women in Theater project. Larissa Fasthorse wrote about the whole Native American situation. It was a comedy, but it was controversial because not only did it make, let's say, white people look silly and funny, but it also showed quite clearly the pain of Native Americans in our communities. And we had talkbacks, and it created a lot of emotional responses. And we had a local artist from the reservation come and display her artwork. And she came with her daughter and her family, and they were part of the talkback on the stage. And it was heated in a great way, but it caused controversy. And then it caused controversy in regular attendance. People kind of were a little too uncomfortable with it.
I remember reading about that going to be on your stage and thinking just some of those thoughts. I think I'll pass on this one. Kind of.
But you know, it's really worthwhile for us doing it and also to see how the community was affected. What people said And we had others, people who are living in our community and not on the reservation, who are Native American, a beautiful teacher that my children had at the West Indian Beach Elementary School. And to hear them speak and to understand a little bit about their stories was pretty tremendous.
So what do you have planned after I Do?
Oh, well, we've got something really fun. It's called 39 Steps, and it's a parody of a pseudo mystery. It's hilarious, and one of our newer directors, Catherine Klein, is directing it, and she directed Boeing Boeing last season, which was a huge hit. So we're expecting this one to really land nicely as well.
When will that be? What are the
That
dates?
opens Memorial Day weekend and runs for 3 weekends.
And is there one after that?
Then we give the theater to the Quag Junior Theater Troupe for the summer. They do 2 children's shows. Then we take it back up again in September.
I see. So it really runs pretty year-round.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to this, and I'm glad I gave you a call.
Oh, I'm going to be at each show. So if you're going to show up, I'll look at the guest list to make sure we meet in person and we say hi. I'll get you a cookie.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Of course, anytime. It's lovely to do. Lovely to meet you.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.